Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go, in a town of 1200 off an old dirt road, and a country boy is all I'll ever be.
All right, everybody. So, ever since I put together the 375, or I shouldn't say I put it together, I bought the Ruger guide rifle and 375 Ruger and put a scope on and set it up, I've got a lot of questions about the 375 Ruger. And a lot of people are interested in the cartridge and its potentials and why I put the rifle together the way I did. So I decided to go ahead and just do a solo episode and talk about the 375 Ruger as a cartridge rifle, why I set it up the way that I did, and answer some questions about the rifle cartridge and everything. So we're going to go ahead and dive in here. I've got some show notes, and we'll go ahead and just kind of go through these. So the first one is talking about why or how long I've wanted a 375 Ruger, and I've actually wanted one for a long time. Growing up, my dad was really into the big bores, and with his ammo loading business, you know, trying to do a lot of the buffalo bore type ammunitions and that kind of stuff, you know, over heavy for caliber, you know, hot loads. So we always were playing with big bores. I grew up shooting big bores. I like big bores. And a 375 Ruger isn't technically a big bore because it's not over 40 caliber. But, it's, you know, it's up there. It's a big cartridge. I've always liked the 375 H&H, 375 JRS. I had a 375 Whelen for a while. I like the 375 cartridge. And I actually remember, I know I was, the 375 Ruger came out in 2007, I think. And I remember reading about it, you know, I was 15, 16, or I would have been, yeah, I was 15 in 2007. So I remember when the cartridge came out, you know, and I read about it, and it seemed like a good idea. And then for a while, my dad actually had a 375 Ruger. I think his was a Ruger number one that he, you know, developed some loads for and then sold, you know, to be able to add the ammo to his inventory for the shop. So I've always wanted one. The idea of the 375 Ruger has always kind of interested me. And we'll get into that, why I went and wanted the 375 Ruger over a 375 H&H or something like that that's on a long action here in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I've been wanting the 375 Ruger for quite a while. And yeah, it was, got my notes right here, it was introduced in 2007, and it was designed to exceed or meet the 375 H&H's performance on a standard length action. So we'll go ahead and talk about the cartridge here a little bit. Anybody that really knows what the 375 Ruger is probably knows that they just took the belt diameter of the 375 H&H, blew the cartridge out to the full diameter of the belt, so there is no belt, it's just a standard, you know, rimless cartridge. And then they were trying to equal the 375 H&H case capacity while shortening the case. And so the case length of 2.58 inches, so it's just slightly longer than like a 270 Winchester, with an overall cartridge length that they in the book as 3.340, so very similar to like a 338 or a 30-06 or something like that. So Ruger and Hornady and Ruger were in this cartridge, built this cartridge together to work on the standard Ruger M77 actions. They had what's the other action called? Their big long action that they were putting a 375 Ruger or the 375 H&H and stuff like that on for a long time was actually built around the 416 Rigby. So it was a significantly bigger action. I mean, it was a hefty action. You know, it had to handle the fatter 416 Rigby kit cartridge and the length. So, you know, we were talking about a lot of extra weight and a more expensive rifle to build. I think the true long action Rugers were somewhere in the price range of double of that of an M77 Mark II back in the day. So that's when Hornady and Ruger designed this cartridge to work on a standard M77 rifle, which, you know, they build in 338 Winchester, 300 Win Mag, 7 Mag, 30-06, all that. They wanted the cartridge to fit into that. And when they actually ended up doing it by redesigning the cartridge the way they did, actually ended up with a little more case capacity. I've seen claims of between 4% and 6%, so around 5% more case capacity with the 375 Ruger cartridge, and they were not considering the advantage of the shorter, fatter cartridges just seemed to burn propellant more efficiently. So they ended up with a pretty good cartridge here. You know, out of the same length barrel, it'll exceed the 375 H&H at the same pressure by about 150 foot per second. So the 375 H&H, and this is actually something I didn't know about until I was reading my doing some research for this article. So the 375 H&H was originally designed to use cordite propellant, and I believe that's part of the reason why it was designed with such a heavy amount of taper. Because if you look at a lot of the cartridges that the British designed that use cordite, like the 303 British was one that used cordite, they all have that, you know, long tapered cartridge. And I think it has a lot to do with the way that powder, that propellant burned. So I think that has something to do with why the 375 H&H has so much taper to it, you know. And there's improved versions of the 375 H&H, you know, the 375 Weatherby, it's just a modified version. You know, he bases design off the 375 H&H, the 375 H&H Ackley, there's 375 JRS, there's several different variations, you know, of improved versions of the 375 where they blow the walls out straight, and obviously those are going to hold a significantly amount, you know, more powder than the 375 Ruger. But the 375 Ruger being fairly straight walled and rimless, they were actually able to increase the case capacity over the 375 H&H just a little bit. Let's see, I'm just trying to go through my notes here and pick out. Yeah, right here, the Ruger Express Action was built to handle the 416 Rigby, so it was heavier and longer than the standard M77. It did, yeah, right here, about twice as much. One other thing, another thing about the Ruger, the 375 Ruger, and this is something that, you know, playing with my rifle, I haven't had any issues, and I did a lot of research. So the Ruger, the 375 Ruger and the Ruger rifles don't seem to suffer from the feeding issues that we see a lot of times with the short magnums. Like the Winchester, like I know the 325 Winchester short magnum was kind of known for having feeding issues, but I'm sure the 7mm and the 300 were as well. And the super short mags from Winchester were really bad about having feeding issues. I remember when they first came out, quite a few of them coming through the shop to be worked on, and they were from what I've read, Ruger really was able to work those issues out. I haven't heard of anybody really having any feeding issues with the 375 Ruger and the Ruger rifles. Hornady and Ruger have a really good marketing, especially Hornady has a really good marketing team, and that's why there's several cartridges like the 6.5 Creedmoor that have really kind of dominated the market in the last few years, and I think it has a lot to do with Hornady's marketing team. So the 375 Ruger was one of the most successful big bore cartridges ever introduced, and even though it's only been out for 14 years, it already takes second place to the 375 H&H as the most popular 375 caliber cartridge worldwide. And I forget what the metric designations of it, but it's popular enough that there is a metric designation for the rifle, you know, for the four cartridges. It's like 11 point, or not even 11. I can't remember what it is. I'm going to have to Google that. But there is a metric designation for the cartridge. Ruger 375 Ruger metric. 9.5 by 65.5 is what they call it. And it is, yeah, that's actually like when you look it up, the SAMI or whatever specs, it shows up on there. So that's kind of cool. And then, since 2007, when Hornady and Ruger developed the cartridge, they've built a couple other cartridges off this case design, including the 416 Ruger. The 300 PRC is based on the 375 Ruger as well, neck down to 30 caliber. And then Ruger had their own line of short magnums. They call it the compact magnums. They had a 300 and a 338 compact Ruger compact magnum, which was a shortened 375 Ruger case for a while. When looking through my notes here, I forgot today was Sunday. I'm trying to get back to getting an episode out every Sunday, so I wasn't really 100% quite prepared to get this episode out, but I wanted to at least try to get something out today. So the Ruger, here we go, Ruger Hawkeye Guide Alaska. So Ruger has three models of the 375 Ruger they've got on the market right now. And it's worth knowing that there was actually a first generation and second generation of the Hawkeye Guide and the African that did not have muzzle brakes. So the Ruger Hawkeye Guide was formerly they, so they also have the Alaskan, and there's the guide rifle, and there's the Alaskan rifle. And they're basically, they are basically the same rifle, except the guide rifle comes with, in today's market, the guide rifle comes with a laminated stock with the Ruger adjustable length of pull spacers, and the Alaskan comes in a Hogover mold. So they offer all four models in left-handed, and I'm sorry, they offer all four models in right-handed, and they offer the guide and the African in left-handed. So on the guide rifle, that's what I have. I have the guide, and it is a first generation, so it doesn't have the muzzle brake, and it does not have the adjustable length of pull. It just has a standard gray. So the new one they call the Green Mountain laminate, and the old one was like peppered gray or something like that. So mine's got the gray laminate stock instead of the green, and it doesn't have a muzzle brake, which I am fine with, because if I did have the threaded barrel, I'd never put a muzzle brake on it anyway for the kind of hunting that I do. So, yeah, the Ruger, the guide and the Alaskan are the exact same stainless barrel receiver. They got a 20-inch barrel. The FTW Hunter does not have iron sights on it. It's just a, it's got a synthetic stock on it. I believe it's stainless. 22-inch barrel, no irons on it, just a scope. And then the African has a 23-inch barrel, and it has the express sights just like the Alaskan and the guide do. And then there's actually two other brands that are currently have 375 Rugers on the market that I was able to find. So surprisingly, the one that really surprised me is Mossberg has a 375 Ruger on the market. Their Mossberg Patriot with a 22-inch barrel and iron sights. And I was really surprised at the number of options they had. They don't have a left-handed option, but they do have several different options depending on the stock type you want. They had synthetic stocks, they have laminated stocks, they have regular walnut stocks. And from my experience with the Mossberg rifle, they make a pretty nice rifle for the money. And the Mossberg 375 Ruger actually has a MSRP of $505, so it's extremely reasonable. That's a for $500 with that Mossberg, and I'm honestly tempted to buy one and really kind of run it through the ringer as an Alaskan rifle, because a 375 Ruger and a 22-inch barrel, iron sights for $500, I mean, that's a rifle that almost anybody can afford and hunt anything in the world. I mean, if you can afford to go hunting, you can afford that rifle. And, you know, for elk, moose, bear, Cape Buffalo, I don't care, that 375 Ruger is fine. So that's a lot of firepower, or a lot of muzzle energy, whatever direction you want to go with, whatever, you know, per dollar. That's a pretty good deal. And then Savage also has their Savage Brush Hunter in a 20-inch, and their MSRP is $719. And then, you know, just browsing the internet, I've seen a couple of Howa 1500s and 375 Ruger, but it is not currently listed on their site. So I don't know anything about that. And then, that Mossberg Patriot actually has caught my interest. And I didn't know that existed when I bought my Ruger. And I'm going to have to do a little more research on that, because that could be a really cool rifle, you know, for people that want to come up to Alaska and shoot a moose or something like that, you know, on a budget. Or people that have just moved up here for work or whatever and they need a heavy-hitting rifle. But that's probably about the cheapest, not technically a big bore, but the cheapest big bore I've seen. I'm gonna have to look into that a little more. That's pretty interesting. So 375 Ruger ammo. Double Tap makes ammo and Hornady makes ammo, and I think Swift's offering 375 Ruger ammo right now. So it's still kind of slim pickings. Hornady has four loads, I believe, and Double Tap has three loads. So here we go. We got the So here's the ballistics on the 375 Ruger with the 250 grain Hornady GMX. The 375 Ruger is pushing that bullet with the factory Hornady loading at 2,800 foot per second with 4,352 foot pounds of energy. And the H&H with the same length barrel is pushing it at 2,700 foot per second with 4,000 and 47 foot-pounds of energy. And then Hornady 300-grain DGX, the Dangerous Game Expanding, is being pushed out of 24-inch 375 Ruger at 2660 with 4,713 foot-pounds of energy, and 375 H&H with that bullet from Hornady is going 2530 with 4,263 foot-pounds of energy. So that's 130 foot per second difference on the heavy end. I mean, the double tap, I don't have their 375 H&H loadings. I don't know if they even offer 375 H&H ammo, but they're pushing all their loads to use the Barnes TSX or the Barnes TTSX. So they got their 235 grain Barnes launching at 3,100 foot per second from a 23-inch barrel, and 2950 from the short barrel, 20-inch barrel. 250 grain Barnes TTSX, it's the same bullet I'm shooting, at 2,950 foot per second from the long barrel, and 2775 from the short barrel. I'm pushing mine right at 2830 with my hand loads, so that's pretty reasonable. And then the 270 grain Barnes TSX hollow point from the long barrels, they're showing 2835, and from the short barrel they're showing 2,665 foot per second from the short barrel for that 270 grain barn. So those are, you know, pretty significant. You can see the velocity drop, you know, around 100 foot per second when you drop to that shorter barrel. But that's the thing, you're supposed to be able to equal the 375 H&H from a safari length barrel in a more compact, handier rifle like my Alaskan. So yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff. So why did I go with the 375 instead of a 3416 Ruger? And basically that comes down to that they didn't offer the 416 in a left-handed rifle, and I wanted to try out a left-handed rifle. I've never owned a left-handed rifle before. Actually, I take that back. I have. I had a Ruger Mark II 270 that I don't even remember if I shot or not. Like, and I liked it, but just I don't like 270. So I think I did shoot it, but it went down the road here, you know, pretty quickly. And then I had a Ruger Mark, a Savage Mark II 22 long rifle that was left-handed for a little while. That, again, I don't remember what I did with it, but it didn't keep stay around very long, because I don't shoot 22s that much. I really wanted to try a left-handed rifle. You know, the more I'm getting into big game, you know, hunting and reading, like right now I'm reading Jeff Cooper's Art of the Rifle, and wanting to be able to get into running a rifle faster. So I've always run a right-handed rifle with my right hand, and I shoot left-handed. And I've always held the gun by the pistol grip up against my shoulder, tilted my head back, ran the bolt up, back, and then forward and down with my right hand. And it's worked, and I've never really considered it a disadvantage until I started shooting this left-handed 375 Ruger, and I wish I would have gotten and shot a left-handed rifle a long time ago. That is significantly easier and faster, and it is also pretty funny to watch right-handed people try to shoot the rifle. So that's one of the reasons I went with the 375 instead of the 416. And yes, I could have had a custom rifle built in 416, but I didn't want to spend that kind of money, because I was playing around with the left-handed concept. Plus, I've been watching for left-handed 375 Ruger for a while. The one I got an exceptionally good deal on. I think I got it for like $819 brand new, old stock. So I got a really good deal on my rifle. And then, of course, the 375 is going to be flatter shooting than a 416 also. And I kind of wanted to put this together as a general purpose Alaskan rifle. Yeah, it's not the best for close-up shots. You know, if you got a bear charge and you got to make a snapshot at 10 yards, it's not going to be the best for that. But it's got a 1-6 scope on it. I can crank that scope all the way down for that kind of work, and it will work. And I've actually got a red dot on that scope, so I can use it as a red dot. I've got the illuminated reticle. I can turn the dot on, shoot both eyes open, and use it just like a red dot all the way down on one power. So it'll work for that close range work. And it's not the best for going up in the mountains after sheep, making a 450, 500 yard shot, but it will work. I bought a scope that had decent click adjustments on it. I went with the Vortex Viper PST Gen 2, 1-6 by 24, and I played around with it. I've got a bunch of Vortex scopes. I really like Vortex scopes. I've always had extremely dependable and accurate click adjustments on their scopes. And from what I've played with this one so far, it has been very dependable as well, accurate clicks. So I wanted the option. It's got low-capped target turrets on it, and I wanted that option to be able to click shots in. Is it the best setup for that? Absolutely not. Will it work? Yeah, it'll work. And actually, whenever I get to go home from work, I'm going to go take that rifle out and kind of stretch its legs out to 600, 650 yards and kind of see how well my dope that I came up with for that rifle and load works at that range. But, you know, for the general Alaskan shot, you know, 150 yards, 100 yards, 150, 200 yards right in there, it's going to be perfect. You know, I can crank that scope up to 4, 5, 6 power, and it's gonna be absolutely great for that kind of stuff. And honestly, you know, I can sight that thing inch high, 2 inches high at 100 yards. And for the general purpose, you know, general type Alaskan shooting, I won't even have to mess with the scope. So it's gonna be set up really good for that kind of stuff. You know, and a lot of this, putting this rifle together, had to do with last year during moose season, I passed up a shot on a moose because I couldn't see very well in the dark for the iron sights on my 458. So originally I was thinking, I'll just put a scope on the 458, but I don't really want to do that. So then I got a good deal on this 375, so I, you know, put it together. So I got a list of questions here. First question comes from Phil. And he wants to know, what's the heaviest bullet I can load and shoot with it? And would it be worth building a rifle on a long action with a longer magazine just specifically to handle heavy bullets? So I will answer the first part of that question. 350 grain seems to be about the max that is fairly readily available for as far as bullets go. I think Barnes makes a 350 grain original. And I think they actually make a 350 grain TSX as well. So there's a few different 350 grain options. I don't know of anybody producing 350 grain factory ammo, but there are a handful of bullets on the market for the heavy end of the spectrum. I think one company even has a 370 grain that they claim will work in the 375 rear. As far as magazine length goes, no. I don't think you'd really... I mean, you would benefit if you built a rifle specifically with an extra long throat and then you were shooting the bullets out to the full length of the magazine. Of course, you'd benefit anytime you can increase powder capacity. You can, and, you know, you'll increase velocity and energy. But at that point, I think you'd be better off going with a case with it just built to have higher capacity versus trying to build a custom rifle. And the magazine on these rifles isn't really all that short. The Barnes TSX, I'm loading quite a bit longer than, or I got the TTSX, I'm sorry. And I'm loading those quite a bit longer than what they're designed to be loaded, because I'm seating into the second of the grooves that they build on, that they put on those bullets. So I forget what the exact length of the cartridge is, but it's a pretty long cartridge that'll fit into that magazine. You're not as limited on magazine space as you would think they would be. They didn't design the cartridge to fill up every last possible bit of space in the magazine. You have some room in the magazine. So no, I don't think you'd benefit that much from building a custom rifle with this chambering. If you wanted to get more horsepower and benefit from a longer magazine, I think you'd be end up going with something like a, you know, like the 375 Weather or the 378 Weatherby or whatever, you know, a fatter, longer cartridge where you can really increase the horsepower, the powder capacity to increase the horsepower. There we go. And then, why did I choose a 375 Ruger over other popular choices, also by Phil? And that's a good question. There's a lot of popular cartridges up here in Alaska. You know, everything from 338 Winchester, 4570, 416 caliber rifles are super common up here. 416 Remington is really common. 375 H&H is obviously very common. Either one of the 375 or the 375 or the 378 Weatherbys are common up here. 350 Norman Magnums, 350 Remington Magnums, 458 Win Mags, 458 American, 450 Marlins are common up here. I mean, there's all kinds of common things. And it comes down to, I wanted it. I wanted a 375 Ruger. I thought it was a cool rifle. I liked the idea of a shorter, lighter action that was, cost-effective to make and less chance of short-stroking the action and all that kind of stuff in a hairy situation. I just liked the idea of the 375 Ruger. It sounded like a really good cartridge to me. It's what the 375 H&A should have been to start with, if you ask me. But I'm not really a fan of that long tapered cartridge. And the belt on the 375 H&H would have never existed if the cartridge wasn't long and tapered, because it wasn't head spacing properly off the shoulder, so they had to add the belt. So, yeah, they should have, the 375 H&H should have had more straight walls right from the start, if you ask me. So I really thought that, yeah, the 375 H&H is, I'm sorry, the 375 Ruger, it really caught my interest. So, and then we have a question from Alex. Specifically, why the 375 Ruger over the 375 H&H, especially since 375 H&H ammo is more plentiful. And he does have a point with that. You know, every company under the sun offers 375 H&H ammo versus three companies that offer, you know, that aren't custom ammunition manufacturers, but there's three main companies that produce 375 Ruger ammo. And again, up here in Alaska, the 375 Ruger is pretty easy to find. I can walk in, even now in this animal pandemic, I can walk into pretty much any gun store and find 375 Ruger, where right now 375 H&H is actually harder to find, believe it or not. Under normal circumstances, you could probably find it, but right now it is harder to find and it's more expensive. It's about $110 to $120 bucks a box up here if you're buying factory ammo. Even up $140 bucks a box if you're getting something with the fancy bullets like the Barnes TSX, where I am buying the 375 Ruger factory ammo when I bought some to shoot up and get the brass. I was paying, I think, like $74 bucks a box. So it is cheaper ammo. It's not that hard to find up here. And then the other thing is I was able to get it in an American-made left-handed rifle. I don't believe there's any American companies offering a 375 H&H in a bolt action right now. The only two that I'm aware of that are producing 375 H&Hs are CZ. CZ has the CZ550, and they actually do offer that in a left-handed model. But you know, you're looking at a $1,700 rifle, $1,800 rifle up here versus the $1,100 I can pick the Ruger up for. So the price of, and you know, of course, the Ruger is American made, and I like to buy American made. So that's one. I mean, the only other company I know of that's making a 375 H&H right now is Browning. Browning makes, oh, what's that rifle they make? The X-Bolt, I think. But anyway, I think Browning offers a 375 H&H right now. And those rifles are about $2,200 bucks, $2,300 bucks. I think they're made in Belgium. Again, they're not American made, and they're not cost effective like the Ruger is. And like I said, I can walk into just about any gun shop in Fairbanks and pick up a Ruger 375. They're very common up here for between $1,000 and $1,100 bucks most of the time. $1,200 on the top end if it's one of the Safari models. But they're pretty easy to find up here. And they're cheaper than most of the 375 H&Hs on the market, especially if you're looking at like old Winchester 375 H&Hs, or heck, even the old Ruger Magnum Actions or the old Remington 700s. They're pretty expensive, you know. So that has a lot to do with why I did it, just availability of the American-made rifle. I mean, Travis asked what weight bullet I'm planning on shooting. This is actually the last question for the night. So, right now I'm shooting the 250 grain Barn the TTSX. The reason for that is because I did not, when I bought the 375 Ruger, I did not expect the 375 Ruger to be being hoarded. I expected to be able to find reloading components and whatever else, and there wasn't really anything available. So I bought a couple boxes of factory ammo, shot it up, sighted the rifle in, and I got to see what it would do. And then, so I keep my eye open. I bought dies and that kind of stuff, but I didn't have any 375 bullets. And finally, when I found some 375 bullets, I was able to find 400 of the Barnes 250 TTSX, and I went ahead and bought them. And I bought all of them because they were available. And you know, for what I'm going to be doing right now, kind of getting a feel for what the rifle will do, the 250 grain will shoot flatter. I think the 250 grain Barn TSX may have the highest or the second highest BC of the non-match 375 bullets. So it's going to be a pretty flat shooting bullet, and I can push that, you know, fairly decent out of that little short barrel. So it's not a bad bullet, but originally I was intending on shooting 270 grains out of it. I wanted to use the 270 grain Hornady fire point. I like Hornady bullets, or the 270 grain TSX is a good bullet. Or for, you know, close range bear hunting and that kind of stuff, I wanted to use that Hornady 300 grain DGX expanding. But I don't always get what I want, and right now, with the availability of what you can find and what you can get, I ended up buying a bunch of the 250 grain TTSX, and I got a good deal on them. I think I paid $40 a box for them, which comes to about 80 cents a bullet. And like right now, if you look those bullets up on Midway, they're around $70 a box. So, yeah, not exactly what I wanted to shoot at it, but they'll work. You know, I wouldn't hesitate to shoot a moose or a caribou or a bear with that bullet and know it would get the job done. Barnes makes some good bullets. I don't generally like Barnes bullets, and not because they're not a good bullet, but they make an excellent bullet. But I don't like the fact that they generally cost about twice as much as a Hornady or a Sierra. I like Hornady bullets. That's normally who I go through when I buy bullets. But Barnes makes a good bullet, and I wouldn't hesitate to shoot anything that walks this side of the earth with that 250 grain TSX or TTSX. If I was going over to Africa or something like that, I'd probably go with a 300 grain expanding solid. Or, I'm sorry, expanding, not a solid. But right now I'm sticking here in Alaska, and I wouldn't hesitate to shoot anything up here, even a polar bear if I had the opportunity with that 250 grain TSX. So anyway, that's all I've got for tonight. I apologize for this episode kind of being a cluster. Like I said, I kind of forgot I was supposed to record an episode tonight, and I wanted to go ahead and get it done because there's a possibility I won't be available to record for the next couple of days, and I'm really trying to get back on track for putting out weekly episodes. So I'm going to go ahead and get this one wrapped up. If anybody has any questions about the 375 Ruger, you can always find me on Facebook. A lot of listeners are on my personal Facebook. You can find the Mountain Man Dan Show on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram under the Shooter's Apprentice. Yeah, there's lots of places you guys can find me. If you have any other questions or any comments on the show, ways to improve it, make it better, things you'd like to hear, things you don't want to hear, you know, I'm always open to constructive criticism. I want to do best I can to go ahead and keep making the show better and better. But I do appreciate everybody taking their time to tune in tonight and listen to our episode, and we will see everybody next time.